Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Tim Miller, John Curcio, Jazz Amaja, Chris Fuchs, John Lloyd, Atif Sheik, Justin Maintner, Cavante Chillis, Molly Ficarella, Thomas Navin, Mike Franz, Nathan McKenzie, Joe McIndo, Trayvon Brady, Steve Rogers, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nick Ryan Magdoza, T. Hamill, Becca Zeifel, Nicholas Casso, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Fansler, Jared Gibbs, and Erica Flynn. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this week by Mr. Michael Ortiz. What's up, Michael?
Hey, Zach. I am so excited to be on this podcast. I listen all the time. We talked quite a ways back about me being on Ageless, and I know I jumped the gun a little bit, but I was telling all my friends and family, I'm going to be on Always Hold On to Smallville. This is so cool. This is my chance to be part of the Smallville legacy. So thank you so much for having me, Zach.
Well, thanks, man. I hope that I'm part of the Smallville legacy. That's my goal, too. But we'll try to get there together.
Definitely. You got the official Smallville podcast.
Thanks, Mike. And yes, and as you guys might have noticed, you are not Stephen S. DeKnight, are you, Michael?
No, I, as Craig Byrne and you put it earlier this season, I am the disappointment. I am the guest on Ageless who is not Stephen S. DeKnight. So you're welcome, everyone. I'm not Stephen S. DeKnight.
You did not write or direct this episode. No, so but Stephen did say on Twitter, and I mentioned this last week, that he's willing to come on and talk, you know, but just in general. And honestly, I'd rather prefer to talk to him about that because he's done so many great things for Smallville. Like Run, Justice, Onyx, you know, went hit on all those things and not just, all right, let's talk about Ageless for an hour and a half. You know? So
right.
I think it all worked out for the best. So we're talking about Ageless this week. But before we get into that, Michael, why don't you share with the listeners a little about yourself, your Superman fandom, your Smallville fandom, how that all kind of intersects and how you became a fan of Smallville.
All right. I get to talk about the WB network. I love talking about the WB network. It's some of my earliest and some of my most fondest memories were growing up watching the WB network. Every weekday when I'd come home from school, I would sit right in front of the TV, watch Kids WB, and literally until it was my bedtime, I would watch WB all day, have it on in the background when I was doing homework and eating dinner. Kids WB is what drew me in, but I stayed for those primetime teen dramas, you know. Dawson's Creek, I have no shame in saying. I liked Dawson's Creek.
I don't want to wait for loves to be over. Yeah, everybody knows Dawson's Creek.
Almost as good as the Smallville theme song, but not,
I mean,
quite.
That's just as iconic, I think, at least to people in our age bracket.
Definitely. And all those WB shows, Buffy, Angel, actually, Angel is my favorite show of all time. I love those. And like I said, Kids WB is what drew me into the WB network originally. I watched Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, and I love those shows. Batman the Animated Series, that was the first time I ever looked at a show and said, this is my favorite above all else. But of course, Superman, we got to give Superman his due. Superman's awesome as well. And when I was a little kid, I remember exactly where I was. I was in my room watching my little CRT television, and I saw a commercial for the Smallville pilot. And I was freaking out because at this time, As far as I knew, Superman was just a cartoon that I liked. I didn't know that there would ever been... I didn't even know about the comics. I didn't know about the live-action TV or movie adaptations either. And I remember hearing that voice, that classic WB voice, introducing Smallville on the WB's new Tuesday. And I was freaking out. And I was like, what? That Superman cartoon I like, they're making a live-action show? I gotta see this. So the day of the pilot's premiere, I camped out. I was at my grandma's house. I camped out in the living room. It was like 5 or whatever. And I camped out there for hours to make sure I got the good TV in the living room because I was not missing the Smallville pilot. And I had high expectations. It did not disappoint me.
Well, that's awesome, man. Did you stay through it for all 10 years?
Actually, I watched as they aired from seasons 1 through 4. Mm-hmm. And then after season 4, I kind of fell out. Early last year, I was watching some YouTube clips of Superman the Animated Series. On the sidebar, I saw some Smallville clips. And I was like, oh, Smallville. Yeah, I remember that. I love that. I haven't seen that in forever. So I was watching some Smallville clips. Then eventually, I started to go back, and then I just binged through the whole series on Hulu, starting with... I chose to start with one of my favorite episodes, Red, from Season 2, because mm-hmm. I love the Red Kryptonite episodes. So I wanted to start with that. And then I went through, saw everything I missed. And as I was watching it, I was like, this show is so good. Why did I stop watching? I figured out the reason. So starting in season 5, the WB, they moved the show to Thursday nights. Well, I was a huge WWE pro wrestling fan.
And the WB became the CW as well. So there was a lot of shakeup behind the scenes. So...
Right. And this, for whatever reason, I love the WB, have such fun memories, but I never got into the CW. But I figured out, season 5, the big shakeup, the move Smallville to Thursday nights, WWE SmackDown was on the UPN on Thursday nights.
Oh,
I didn't have DVR, or I didn't know how to record from a VCR. I had to choose between Smallville and WWE. I chose WWE. And there's a Smallville connection with WWE. Some WWE wrestlers were on... We're on Smallville.
Kane,
he's now the mayor. He's now a mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee.
So. Yes, and in the grand tradition of Jesse Ventura becoming a governor, Kane is now a mayor.
Now mayor. Yeah, and then Dave Bautista is a big star now.
Of course, Bautista. Yeah. And we all know he's gone on to greater things since Smallville and wrestling as well. So.
Yes, definitely.
Glad Hulu gave you the access to finish the show, right? So another round of applause for Hulu, everyone, for giving everyone
Hulu
access to Smallville.
All right. And Always Hold On to Smallville was the perfect companion to it as I was watching some episodes that, you know, I didn't remember. So it was like I was watching them for the first time. It's great. Always Hold On to Smallville, great companion when you're watching along.
What do you have some favorite seasons of the show or a favorite era of the show?
Seasons 2 and 3, that was my favorite era, the high school era of it. And watching as a little kid, watching these older teenagers in high school, of course, you know, I thought they were so cool. Oh, they're older, they're cool. This is what high school is like. Smallville didn't exactly give me an accurate representation of
Smallville is a terrible school representation of high school. So
as you pointed out.
Yeah, it's. I really enjoy pointing that out. Now, man, if season 4 is almost over, I'm not going to be able to talk about playing basketball in your jeans or any of that kind of stuff anymore. So I'm going to miss that component of the podcast.
But the funniest era was the college era, because everyone just suddenly dropped out of college out of nowhere, and pretty quickly too.
Well, there was Dark Thursday, and then no one went back to school after that in season 5, and I guess, well, Chloe. You know, she was an intern, so good for her. Clark just became a kind of a degenerate and did nothing for 2 years, just hanging out at the farm. And then Lana moved in with Lex and then just went off the grid. So, yeah, it's stay in school, people. All right.
Lois got expelled, as we saw earlier this season.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, Lois never went back to college, not that I know of. So, but we'll find out together. But well, that's cool, man. So that's your Smallville origin story. So we can get into the episode proper here. Ageless, right? Written and directed by Stephen S. DeKnight. And he had a lot to say about it in Smallville, the official companion, season 4 by Craig Byrne. Available wherever books are sold. And this is what he had to say. I mean, he says a lot, so we'll quote a lot of him in here. He says, quote, "I blame, once again, myself. This was my first year on the show, and the first time I was directing for Smallville, and I was very much following the party line, like, oh, okay, let's get in there and make it work. We were breaking that story while we were still working on Onyx, and we were talking about Kryptonite Zombies, a story that I still love, with a Luther Corp chemical spill, a graveyard, the classic thing. Kryptonite Zombies attack, and it's Night of the Living Dead on the farm, and Clark's weakened because they're radiating Kryptonite, but that didn't work out. I left to work on Onyx, and then I came back and got told, hey, we've got a great story for you. Clark and Lana find a baby. And then Jeff Loeb and I just started making things worse. What if every time his age shifts, he expends more energy and more energy, so he's basically a human bomb? It just went downhill from there, really. Everybody did their best on the show, but because I was up in the van in the Canadian wilderness for 6 days location scouting, I couldn't rewrite the script." And then creator, executive editor Al Goff, goes on to say, quote, "It's another one of those things where, when you set out to do these stories, you intend for them to be good. When you get the exploding baby point, that's hard. You think on paper, good idea. That one just got a little out of hand." So that's their take on it. And this is infamously one of the worst episodes of the show, at least in fandom. Where do you fall on this episode, Michael?
I actually... I'm so glad that I was able to come on the podcast, because I'm probably one of the few people in the world who's willing to defend this episode. Like, obviously, it's not great. It's not in my top 10 episodes of best Smallville episodes ever. But I don't think it's that bad. It's interesting. A lot of high school shows have the egg baby episode where, you know, students are given an egg baby or some type of baby doll that they have to take care of, and they learn to be parents that way. This is Smallville's twist on the egg baby episode that's done in so many countless teen shows. I don't think it's that bad, and it has its strong points.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's better than its reputation. I'll leave it at that, and we'll get into the conversation here. But yeah, I agree. I could probably name 5 or 10 episodes just off the top of my head that I think are worse than this.
Oh, I got to say, Forever, coming up next, is worse than Ageless.
Now, I haven't revisited these. As I said in the Spirit podcast, when I stopped watching Smallville, I've seen these episodes twice because I watched them once when I got the DVD, and Blank was great, and here we are now with this one, and then Forever's after that, and I know it's House of Wax, you know. But for Smallville, so we'll get into that next week. But yes, I'm curious to see, and that's really the last one in high school. It literally is the last one in high school. I mean, they graduate in commencement, but they have the whole like walking down the hallway and end of school. I mean, that's the whole thing. The guy wants to keep things the way they are forever. So we'll see. Now, speaking of those two titles, by the way, I remember there's a lot of speculation back on Krypton site back in the day, like, oh, because you get the titles first, as you do with a lot of TV shows. And you get these titles weeks in advance, and you're like, oh, Ageless and Forever. I bet that's about Genevieve Teague, how she's some kind of, like, ageless witch. And we're going to really delve into her history and her as the villain and things like that. And I really can't wait to dive into that, because it's all been very ill-defined so far. And then we get to these two episodes, and they have nothing to do with that at all. And it reminded me very much of season 10, where you get the episode list, and you look at the last couple episodes before the finale, and you get Dominion and Prophecy, and you're like, oh, man, this is great. This is going to be about Darkseid, and they're going to talk about the fourth worlds and the Orion and Kalibak. Oh, I can't wait for them to go into this mythology. I've been waiting all season. And then we get to it, and it's like, now I really like Dominion, by the way. I think it's a good way to wrap up Zod, who is one of the best recurring villains on the show. It's because you get, you know, like War World, Beyond Thunderdome kind of thing going on with Oliver and Clark in the Phantom Zone. I liked that, and how they kind of merged the two Zods together, which, because Smallville, you know, they have two of everything, right? They had two Zods for a while. Prophecy is terrible. Prophecy is a horrible, horrible penultimate episode. It's like, hey, let's have a funny episode where Lois and Clark switch their powers and introduce the Legion of Doom. And then never follow up that up at all because we have the series finale the next episode. So that to say, you had a big bad, and I call Genevieve T the big bad of the season because there's really, I mean, I know she's only in a handful of episodes and actually never interacts with Clark. So
yeah, that's true. Yes.
But she is the one kind of pulling the strings behind the scenes, and people were expecting to get some more, I don't know, just some more development for these season-long arcs. And when you have titles like Ageless, Forever, Dominion, Prophecy, you have these big ideas. And then what we got is what we got. But all that to say, let's get into it. Ageless.
I'm dying, aren't I?
Evan, don't say that.
You know, I read the average lifespan of a man is 74 years. I've aged from a newborn to a teenager in 48 hours. Do the math.
Evan, we're not gonna give up. Lexi's got his team working on a cure right now.
And if we can find your father?
You really think they're gonna find a cure for me overnight? It's like my life was just some sort of trick that was played on me. All that stuff I read in the books that I thought I was gonna see. I'm not. Am I?
Don't talk like that, all right? We just have to keep trying.
It's not fair.
Ageless is the 20th episode of Smallville's fourth season. It aired on May the 4th, 2005. It was written and directed by Stephen S. Denight. So May the 4th be with you, Michael. Do you celebrate Star Wars Day?
Oh, what I'm about to say is blasphemous, but I've never been that big of a Star Wars fan. I haven't even seen all of them. All I've seen are episodes 4, 5, 1, and then 7 I saw in the theater.
That is a really odd combination of
Everyone episodes. Says that. I guess it is. It's an odd combination.
All you got to do is the next time there's a holiday, just watch TNT and there are right. Star Wars marathons on and you'll get caught up with everything. But yeah, the thing about May the 4th is, like, I grew up my whole life a Star Wars fan. Never heard about this. Graduated from college, start working in TV, and people are looking for, like, segment ideas. I'm like, hey, well, you know, May the 4th is coming up, Star Wars Day. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like I don't, like, I did it take people 25, 30 years to realize, like, May the 4th is May the 4th be with you? Anyway, that's my rant on May the 4th. It's just so odd that it just came out of nowhere. And now, like, every news outlet, every internet website is May the 4th memes everywhere. It's like, okay, we get it. May the 4th be with you. Very clever. Let's move on. So
right. I never heard of it until just a couple years ago as well. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, apparently this is a thing that's been going on for decades, but I don't know.
Exactly. But anyway, enough about Star Wars. Let's get to Smallville. This episode starts out. I have a man and a woman driving down a country road. She's going into labor. Her stomach starts glowing. It's getting weird. Did you recognize the mom here, Michael?
I did. I made a note here. Actress was Pascal Hutton. She played Raya, Jor-El's assistant from Krypton in season 6, I believe.
Yes, yes. This is one of those cases where, you know, hardworking Canadian actors, familiar faces, they get, you know, multiple roles on shows, and obviously she had a very bit part here, and came back in season 6 to play. I believe she was in 2 episodes, maybe 3.
Yes, I believe 2
of season 6.
2 episodes.
Okay, yeah, and of course they had to kill her off. Spoilers, because
spoilers. The rapper Bow Wow killed her off.
Killed by Little Bow Wow, or was he just Bow Wow at that point? I don't think he was little anymore. So, but yeah, that was. I remember when Mariah showed up. That was really weird. People were like. So Jor-El's doing all this work with her. Where's Lara at? What's going on here? What's this all about? So
right,
they kind of wrapped that up quickly and didn't really address that much. But that was odd, right?
It was. It would. A lot of people would naturally assume that there was some type of romance between her and Jor-El, but the way I always saw it was, you know, he was just her mentor figure. Kind of saw her more as a daughter, and when she came along and finally met Clark, she saw him more as her little brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of vibe they got and for that one episode. And then, as you said, she got Bow Wow. So.
And the actress here, Karen Gallagher, Pascal Hutton played Karen Gallagher, the mother. This was her one scene. She nailed it. She was believable and gave the whole intro a very unsettling tone.
Yeah, because you think, wow, this guy, because you don't know what the situation here, right? You know, she's going into labor. The guy's trying to call 911. There's an emergency going on. She starts glowing, you know, so he pulls over into this field. He freaks out and leaves, and she's like, don't leave me. And you're like, you really feel horrible for her because she's going through this awful thing. And this guy in her life, presumably the father of the child she's about to give birth to, just freaks out and runs away. And then there's a big explosion. And who comes across this explosion but Clark and Lana in Lana's car? And I ask you, Michael, how many times has Lana been driving and Clark's been in the car? Is this the only time in the show where this has happened?
I think so. And I mean, what were they doing? It looked like they were on a date. Like, come on, Lana, break up with Jason first. Come on.
Like, again, I'm very unclear about, like, her and Jason. So their last scene is that one really, like, uncomfortable scene in blank, where he's like, you were the one person that made me forget what I turned into. You have no idea how much I'm protecting you. And he storms out. And was like, are they broken up now? Like, I'm very, just because she didn't want to go to Central Kansas where he went, like, they've broken up. They did a terrible job ending this relationship. Because you're absolutely right. It seems like they're, I mean, okay, men and women do things together and they're not dates. I get it. But but Clark and Lana driving down a country road in the middle of the night.
Exactly.
When in the last episode we had just talked about in blank, like she, like he'd said, things will be different this time, and like she, it seemed like she came over for a date at the end of blank, and he had forgotten about it, and maybe they were going to try again. So I have no idea where Clark and Lana or Jason and Lana's relationship are at this point. One and two, it's just so weird that Clark and Lana would be in a car together because you never see that on the show. And the whole setup here, though, right? What they want to do is they want to make Clark and Lana like Jonathan and Martha. And they find this baby. They find a crater right on the side of the river where the explosion came from. And they find a baby in the middle of a crater, right? And it's very Superman-esque. The visual cues are there. That's why Clark's kind of like looking around at the sky and stuff. He's like, oh, wow. I mean, if I were Clark, I would think, oh, wow, we have another baby from outer space just like me. Because, I mean, where else would your mind go if you find something like this, right?
Exactly. In a smoking crater, a clear callback to the pilot. Putting Clark and Lana in John and Martha's shoes here.
And if Clark had found him alone or Lana had found him alone, you couldn't get that same scene of like both of them standing in the middle of a crater. So I understand why they set it up this way. But again, like Clark and Lana dancing at the prom, you know, the season didn't lead to a point like this. You know, you had to like manufacture some justification for this to happen.
Right before that, I just want to say, I think they might have been trying to do a callback here. Lana was driving a GMC Envoy. And I know in the season 4 premiere, Lois was also driving a GMC too when she found Clark naked in the field. It might have been the same model. It seemed like it might have been a callback to that. I don't know. Just something to point out.
Yeah, I guess that's whoever they had the car partnership, the car advertising partnership with in the show at the time. Because he's usually driving a Jeep Liberty. But good call there. We cut the open credits and we come back and we have a hospital visit plus one for the little baby because we've taken the baby there with the sheriff and Jonathan and Clark are all there. And the sheriff, Adams, she actually gives Clark some props. She's like, you did good for a change, Mr. Kent. You know, so she basically admits that the baby would have died without Clark's help.
I love your Sheriff Adams, by the way.
Well, ain't that a mother. So
sorry, I got to say, I love your Sheriff Adams. And yeah, speaking of her, I was when she was talking to Clark, I was like, one, Clark does your whole department's job for you, policing this town. And two, give Lana some credit. She found the baby, too.
No. They didn't find him. He found us, or you know, however you want to phrase it. Yeah, that's the kind of, I try to quote that phrase a lot, and I always can't say it right because it has to be said in a certain kind of conversation in order to make it work. But anyway, we'll wrap back around to that at the end of the episode when they reference that. Clark and Jonathan start talking about it, and Clark is implying to Jonathan he thinks that this baby is not from around here. because he's like, hey, it's a lot like when you and mom found me. And Jonathan makes a great point. He's like, hey, well, when we found you, we also found a spaceship. So we find out that Child Services is going to take the baby, but they can't deny it. So it's going to have to stay at the hospital overnight. And Clark's like, oh, well, no, he can't stay here. And then he volunteers the Kents take this baby in. And yet again, the Kents are letting somebody in their house. It's this open door policy they have. But to me, it's like, no, a hospital is the perfect place for a newborn baby. I don't know why Clark is so against this baby staying in the hospital. I mean, obviously there would be no plot if he wasn't that way. But I think that's a major strike against it. Like, oh, a newborn baby in the hospital? That's no place for a newborn baby. What did you think about that, Michael?
I don't know why Child Services even let Clark take the baby home. What authority does he have? How could he do a better job than the hospital?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good Samaritan that did the right thing and, you know, took the baby to the hospital. But at that point, like, this baby needs to be left in proper care. But again, they just did it so we could have the story take place. So then we cut to Lana and Chloe in the Talon. And it's nice to see them having a nice, light conversation, talking about the baby. And then Clark comes in and he overhears him talking about Lana's just very impressed with how natural Clark is with the baby, because we had seen in an earlier scene when Clark insists they take him home that he had been crying, the baby, when Lana's holding him, but when she handed him to Clark, he, you know, stopped crying. So, but Clark comes into the torch here, and I always mess up torch and talon. Starts with a T, yes. Two female main characters, their main base of operations, has the same amount of letters, give me a break. But anyway... You know, they start talking about, oh, yeah, could you bring some formula over or some diapers? You know, that Chloe, it's funny to see Chloe's reaction to Lana and Clark talking about this, because it's kind of my reaction seeing them talking about this. It's kind of like, oh, look, they're parents now. Isn't this adorable? Ugh, roll my eyes. But she observes the absurdity of this and also mentions to them, like, hey, don't get too attached, and kind of slows the roll. And we have a plus one for Chloe's unseen connections, because her contact at a emergency services, whatever that is, as whatever her contact is there, found the phone call from the previous night, and it could potentially lead to the father, because the father called in, and Lana's pretty disgusted by, like, did he just leave her there? And I gotta say, yeah, I am too. That is a very unsettling thing, and I think they sold that very well, both seeing it and then hearing it again on the message.
Right, absolutely. They didn't have much time to set up the father, who we'd find out later, his name's Tanner, not Trevor Tanner. And yeah, he didn't have that many scenes, but they did a good job. I think from a writing perspective, Stephen S. DeKnight did a good job building him up as the antagonist. And that's interesting, because this episode doesn't really have an antagonist. I mean, it's Tanner, but you can also see where he's coming from. He's in way over his head. He doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, and it was kind of a gradual reveal of who the dad was and what it was all about, because they wanted to keep revealing more, like, things about, like, how the pregnancy happened and things like that. So, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do there with the gradual reveal, but it really underserved the dad character, and I think the actor for him was just terrible. But we'll get to that when we get
there. I got some interesting trivia about him later.
Oh, excellent, excellent, excellent. So then we cut to our B-plot of the episode, and it's Genevieve Teague in Metropolis, and she's summoned Lionel, and it's time for him to repay old debts. And I guess having only seen this episode, you know, twice now, I had forgotten that this is the scene now that establishes that she got him out of prison. Although we did have those deleted scenes in Crypto, which had established that a few episodes previously. She got him out of prison, and she is convinced that Lex has the stone from China. And Lionel is convinced that Jason has it. And Genevieve, you know, doesn't believe him, because there's no way that her son would keep that from her. And she says that a farm boy, an ex-cheerleader, and Lex Luthor, who do you think got the stone? So she really is convinced that Lex has it, which is interesting. So Jason has the stone from China, but he really isn't telling his mom. I mean, that's what I got from this.
Right. It just doesn't make sense. First, he was hiding the stone from his mom to give to Lana. Now he wants to get the stone for his mom. That Teague family, they have issues.
Well, and remember, like, as far as Jason knows, the stone is missing, right? Because they stored it in the fireplace, or whatever. But that should have never ended up there to begin with. He should have immediately given it to his mom. So that's what makes it, you know, confusing. I know he wanted to find it later, but still. So she's convinced that Lex has the stone, and she, you know, makes a threat about it to Lionel, and he says a threat to any Luther is a threat to me. But she tries to, you know, pretty much leverage that he needs to go talk to Lex and get the stone from him. So that's where we leave that. And then Clark is taking care of the baby at the farm, and Martha has to go to work at the Talon, because remember, Martha works at the Talon, guys, don't forget. So she's gonna leave Clark with the baby, and he thinks the milk might be too cold, so he uses heat vision on the milk, and that would melt plastic, would it not?
Yeah, maybe it was a glass baby bottle, but that that wouldn't work too well either. It was a bit of a stretch, but it's really nice to see Clark use his superpowers for mundane tasks. We don't get to see that often enough.
Yeah, but I mean, I 100% agree with you, but, you know, toasting bread into toast and fixing drain pipes is one thing, but, like, using heat vision on a plastic bottle, you put a plastic bottle in the microwave, you see what happens to it, you know? That's what I'm saying.
Well, Clark's a new dad. He's learning as he goes.
So, so Lana shows up, and he's like, yeah, I think I got this baby thing down, because he's changing a diaper, you know, and then we see the classic, oh, baby pees up in the air. Hilarious.
I rolled my eyes. They had to get that in.
That is just 101 whenever there's a plot in any movie or TV show where somebody finds a baby, right? Clark keeps calling him little guy. And Lana's like, oh, we can't keep calling him that. They're going to make fun of him in high school. I'm like, well, why don't you slow your roll, people? Like, you're not going to be raising this child for 18 years. Not even 18 hours at this rate. They decide to call him Evan because they found him in Evan's field. And Clark finally gets wise to this. He's like, hey, maybe we should slow down a little bit and not get too attached. And of course, Lana says, oh, no, he's an orphan like us. And we can kind of see where they're trying to make this. That's why they feel so connected, because Lana's an orphan. Well, she's technically not because of Henry Small, but we don't talk about him anymore. And Clark is an orphan, although, you know, his biological parents, his adopted parents pretty much are his parents. So this orphan complex, I think, doesn't apply, but I understand where they're going for with that.
Technically, Chloe's an orphan too now, because her dad just disappeared.
No, Gabe is not dead. The show thinks Gabe is dead, but Gabe is not dead. Like, he is not dead. He is just not accounted for. So he has been mentioned, but he is not dead. Well, we never see him again on the show. I mean, she might as well be
no explanation.
But he's not dead. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they should have just killed him off and gone.
They should have. I got to say about that real quick, because Gabe Sullivan just completely disappeared. The Smallville's, I've read some Smallville fan fiction, and that sounds bad because people automatically think about, explicit content. No, there's fan fiction out there that have really cool stories. And the Smallville fan fiction community was really strong when the show aired. And they kind of collectively came up with the explanation that Gabe Sullivan moved away, he met a new woman, married her, started a new family, and after everything Chloe did to her, getting him fired and blacklisted, that he kind of abandoned Chloe for his new family. And I, in my head, that's canon, because that gives Chloe, you know, even richer backstory if that was the case.
Wow, it sounds like you and the fan fiction writers hate Chloe just as much as the people who made the show, Michael.
Oh, hey, no. No, that would be an interesting story to tell. I am with you. I am a total Clark shipper. By the way, Chloe Allison Mack, she was my first ever crush. I was rooting for her and Clark so much. The first autograph I ever got was Allison Mack's.
Yeah, man, I don't blame you. I mean, I had a huge crush on Chloe and Allison Mack as well at the time. So unlike Clark, who was an idiot for not liking Chloe.
Total idiot. As far as first crushes go, mine probably could not have ended any worse.
That's very true. We will leave it at that. But if so, that's a very accurate statement at this point in time. But as Clark and Lana are talking here, Evan, he starts to glow. You know, he's across the house there. He starts to glow. It's this big kind of like energy dispersion, but like it doesn't mess up anything. And then Jonathan, who'd been out in the barn, he runs in. He's like, "Oh, Clark, what's going on?" And they both, and we, well, they all three of them, they look at where Evan was, and they said, "Oh, my God." And then we see that Evan has turned into an 8-year-old boy. Is that old, do you think he was at this point?
I could be wrong, but I believe somewhere they mentioned, I saw this on IMDb. They listed him as 7-year-old Evan. So he was supposed to be 7, I guess.
Okay, fair enough. IMDb, we're going to roll with that. So I was 1 year off. So that's interesting. So this is what we got. We have a super aging baby. So now we know what is going on. What are your thoughts on this meteor freak, quote unquote, power?
Smallville requires you to suspend your disbelief, but this episode takes it too far. It's hard to suspend your disbelief for this.
Yeah, I mean, he's a second generation meteor freak too, you know, which is that they actually mentioned, which is interesting. So, I'll save a little more of that until we find out what the mom's power was and what happened with him. But yeah, there's a lot of, pseudoscience going on there, because we never even found out how his mom got infected, but we'll save that till when we discover through Chloe who his mom was and all that good stuff. But
yes,
our next scene is between Lionel and Lex, and Lionel comes to tell him that Genevieve Teague wants the stone, and Lex says he doesn't have it, and they just go back and forth. And interesting, Lionel says, "You're not gonna have a lot of time left with me, so you can, you know, just accept the fact that I'm your father." And you know, it's a lot of the same conversation they've had in the past, but this time, like, Lionel has a genuine, true concern for Lex here, because he really is looking out for him. He's like, "Watch your back, son." And Lex says, "I always do." And I want to point out, we get a great shot of the Luther stained glass window without the Veritas symbol in this scene. So I love pointing that out. We're going to start pointing it out every time we see it until we get to season 7, I think.
Makes sense. You know, when I first watched season 7, I didn't realize going back that the Luther window never had the Veritas symbol in it. So for a minute, I was thinking, "Oh, wow, they set this up from the beginning." But now I know better.
Oh, the foresight of these writers is incredible. So, also, that window is apparently moved down on the stained glass. So I'll have to go back and look and see exactly when that happened. You know, we can say it was after the hurricane in season 1 because we saw it get shattered there. But we'll see. So that, yeah, I'm gonna definitely keep my eye on that and keep bringing it up until season 7 shows up. And I think, I don't know who it was who pointed it out to me on I believe it was Facebook, but it's like, it wasn't even in every episode of season 7. Like, they didn't even have that much forethought.
Oh, wow, that's incredible.
So yeah, so when season 7 comes around, I'm definitely gonna look at every single scene in that room and see when it actually does pop up. But
by the way, I gotta say, the scene between Lex and Lionel, It's pivotal. Lionel tells Lex that he loves him. That's huge.
And see, and if he'd done that, I don't know, 4 years ago, right? It might have mattered, but I think Lex he's past that at this point, right?
Exactly. And also, after Lionel tells Lex that he loves him, he cautions Lex to watch his back. And Lex says, "I always do." And that's really funny, because earlier in the season, Lionel told Lex the exact same thing, but it was a threat, because Lionel was telling him, "You'll never know when I'll poison you again."
Yeah, that's a good, not a bookend per se, but a good callback to kind of show kind of how far Lionel has come from at the beginning of the season to now at the end. Because although we, you know, at the end of this episode, we do see that the old Lionel really is back, but he's more selective in how he is the old Lionel. You know, he's not as ruthless against Lex. Yeah, obviously, he's going out of his way to protect him. But yeah, so it's an interesting new dynamics in the Luther family. Cut back to the Kents, and they debate with what to do with Evan. And Clark wants to take him to Lex, which is interesting because, like, that's kind of what Clark would fear. You're going to be turned over to, like, the government or scientists and stuff. But, I mean,
exactly.
As he does say to his parents, like, "Hey, look, if something was wrong with me and Lex had the power to fix it, would you bring me to Lex?" And I guess he's right. I mean, what are they going to do, right? They don't know what's going on. But then we cut to Lana and Evan, and he's reading and talking all in the course of a few hours. Like, this is a major problem, I think. What did you think about this, Mike?
I can't believe it. You know, I've read before that children, if they're not exposed to language during their first year of development, that they'll never quite get it. I don't know if that's true. That's what I've heard. Yeah, Evan's been alive for what? This is his second day on Earth, and he can talk, he can read. Not only can he can read at super speed because somehow he's read every book in Clark's Loft.
And his favorite one is the Encyclopedia, right? Well, the Velveteen Rabbit, but then the Encyclopedia. And he stops at W's, and he talks about windmills, which sets up the end of the episode. But the only thing the show tries to have some kind of self-awareness was Lana says, "You know how to read?" And they're like, "Okay, show." Just because she was confused by it, too, doesn't make it okay.
Exactly. But it's really cute how Evan refers to Clark as dad and Lana as mom in this scene. He's clearly a Klana shipper.
Yeah, see, that was like, he's like, "Dad, Mom's going to take me to see a windmill." I was like, whoa, slow your roll there, son. So,
and
yeah, him and Martha, then one and two with a Klana shipper fan club.
Yes, totally. And by the way, 7-year-old Evan was played by Colin Ford. I think he was really good in the few scenes he had. He's really able to gain sympathy with his innocent curiosities. And the actor Colin Ford was in the 2006 animated movie The Ant Bully, along with Allison Mack.
Oh, there you go. It's all connected.
Oh, he was in Captain Marvel, too, as her little brother.
Oh, really? Wow. I didn't know that. You know, as we've all seen, you haven't seen all the Star Wars movies, but you have seen episode one. And, you know, a kid actor can make or break something. And I will say that he was not the problem. He was not the problem in this episode, that actor, Colin Ford. So
correct. He did. I think he did great.
They do tell him that, you know, we're not your mom and dad. And we don't know who your parents are. He's like, but everybody has a mom and dad. They love each other very much, just like you and Lana. It's like, ugh. All right, show, like they're just trying to force Clark and Lana back together at the end of the season when this whole season had been about how they weren't together anymore and weren't going to be. And it's like, okay, like this is just very unorganic, if you will.
Yes, yes, definitely. This whole episode is pretty much that unorganic. But the way I see it, in sort of defense of it, this was just some fan service for the Klana shippers. You get to see them. You get to see them as parents, which they would obviously never become that.
So, right.
Some fan service. Nothing wrong with that once in a while.
That's it. Yeah. Well, no, I get it. I mean, that's why they made them the Kents and this kid Clark, right? That's what they're the proxies. That's what they're going for with this. But I do feel sorry for all those Klana shippers because it was such a bad episode.
I feel bad for us Clark shippers, Chloe. She just got constantly neglected in this show. It was so hard to watch.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I pulled to it that there was some girl named Chloe in Aller Miles Past that just, like, broke their heart. There's something that we're going to get you back.
I remember you saying that, and now that you say it, I'm certain that has to be the case. What other explanation is there to do this to poor Chloe?
Oh, boy. But, you know, and as I always say, you know, Tom Welling, he's always good when there's kid actors on the show and he's playing that fatherly or older brother type, you know, like Ryan and other episodes. And so he does that here as well with Evan. And they take him into Luther Corp. And he does mention that Lex has some of his top scientists on it. They're not from Metropolis, but I still thought it was funny to hear him say that, those top scientists. And Lex comes in and gives him some exposition that Evan is storing energy. The way to stop his rapid aging is to perhaps giving a bone marrow transplant, and it needs to be from a biological father, which raises the stakes to find the dad. Because before they wanted to find him just, you know, out of, you know, curiosity and just so they knew. But now they need to find him in order to save Evan from this rapidly aging thing. He ages again while this conversation is going on. He's a teenager now, and the energy he, you know, expunged was a lot stronger, and there's a lot of damage this time, so it's getting more and more dangerous. And Jeffrey Ballard was the actor who played teenage Evan here, and he looked really familiar to me, but I looked at his IMDb and I couldn't place him in anything I had seen, so I guess he just has one of those familiar faces. I don't know.
He was a guest star on an episode of Supernatural. The episode was called Repo Man in 2012. I don't know. I've never seen it. And also, you say you haven't watched Supernatural either, so I guess it's one of those faces.
Right. He looked kind of like Kyle Gallner, who plays the Flash on the show. I mean, I think that's maybe what I might have thought. I mean, I think he looked a little bit like him, but that's all I got. So
yeah, a little. Yeah, actually, wow, now that you mention it, a little bit. He does. When he just there was a bright flash of light, and all of a sudden it's teenage Evan. But at least Lex gave a pseudoscience explanation. I remember in Spirit, you said, come on, Smallville, give me some pseudoscience. So Stephen S. DeKnight listened. Here's your pseudoscience.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're giving us the what, but not the how. You know, like, well, so, like, how does someone become this way? You know, just, I don't know how multi-generational meteor freaks are supposed to work, because obviously all the meteor freaks are, you know, or at least most of them are teenagers. So we don't know if they get the same powers as their parents or what. But Lex wants to contain him and, you know, put him in isolation. And Clark says, no, you know, we've done enough here. And Clark can take him home. Clark's really standing up for him at this point. And then we cut to them in the barn, and Evan's starting to realize, like, man, I'm not gonna live to see, like, tomorrow, you know, because he's doing the math, and he's like, the average lifespan is 74 years, and he's aged to a teenager in, like, a day, so he's kind of becoming resigned to his fate here, isn't he?
Yes, and I know this whole episode, it's hard to suspend your disbelief over it, but this was a relatable scene. That's a relatable sentiment. You never know how much time you've got. You think, you know, a lot of times you think you're going to live forever, or you don't think about that there's an end point, but there is, and he's having to face that really early on. That's some relatability there.
Yeah, no, I feel, you feel sorry for him. He's a sympathetic character. I mean, he didn't ask for this. He's like, my whole life is some kind of joke, you know, and Clark can, you know, kind of relate. But then Chloe, we have another plus one for another Chloe unseen connection, because she finds out that there was a party Karen Gallagher was at, and they figured out that she is Evan's mom. And we see a picture of her in the Smallville yearbook, so I'll make sure I get a screenshot of that and put it on the social media so we can see what her yearbook message was. she basically says that there was this party, and Karen Gallagher went, and some things went NC-17, and then she got pregnant, and she had a baby within a week, which is crazy. And she had kind of flagged her for wall of weird material because she, like, shortened monitors when she walked by him, so she kind of, like, some kind of EMP ability or something. So that's what I'm saying, like, it doesn't really translate to the rapidly aging baby, but I guess it was an interesting idea to kind of explore, hey, what if a meteor freak had a kid? Would they have powers, right?
Right, I think that is something interesting to explore, and they did that here in Ageless. And I gotta say, it's really nice to see Karen, a non-psychopathic meteor freak. She's just living a normal life.
No, that's a good point. And that's something that was refreshing about last week's episode, Blank, as well. Although the guest character there, he was not a meteor freak in the traditional sense. He was kind of turned into one by Summerholt, and again, he was just a guy trying to get by. You know, these powers don't equate with, like, psychosis, even though the early episodes of Smallville seem to imply they do, right?
Right, that's the impression you would get. And I gotta say, last week's episode, the meteor freak, can't remember his name off the top of my head, but this is just a funny side note in hindsight. I thought he was somehow going to become Smallville's Green Arrow, just because his main outfit was a green sweater under a leather jacket. And in his flashback scene where he's hunting with his dad and his brother, and his dad shoots his brother, he's wearing green flannel. But he was not Smallville's Green Arrow.
No. Well, hey, you know, the color correction premise isn't bad, because that's what they do.
Yes.
I mean, Aquaman has to wear orange, and Cyborg has to wear gray, and Flash has to wear red, and Oliver Queen has to wear green. So you got the color coordination right. And I believe Kevin was his name.
Kevin, so. Not Trevor Kevin. I just didn't want to skip over this. This was a plus one for student deaths.
Oh, you know, that's a great idea. I completely didn't think about that.
So I just wanted to make sure I get that in there for historical documentation.
I cannot understand why I forgot that. I guess because I wasn't in that frame of mind because of when she died. So I didn't know she was a student, you know? And now they reveal she's a student, and I completely forgot about that. So thank you very much. Plus one for Smallville High School student death.
Corey Moore will be proud.
Yes, yeah. Very good, very good. So I will have to look up the total later on when we do the tally bar, because I did not account for that. So thank you, Michael. I love the next part of this scene, though, because Chloe's like, oh, let's go to the Evite so we can see who the other guests were at the party. And then she's like, I guess ours got lost in the electronic mail. It's just a snide comment about how they were not invited to this this party. That's probably my favorite line of the episode.
Usually Chloe does have the line that steals the episode. I think it might be a toss-up between this and earlier in the episode when she said, you know, I found an arrowhead in Evan's field once, but never a baby.
And I will also take a screenshot of her Evite here and share that because we had a lot of fun with the with her email address last week. So the computer monitors of Smallville continuing to supply us with fun screenshots. So
the digital wave, you got to get on that domain.
Whoever gets it, like I said, I'll pay you whatever you want so I can use it one day. But Chloe Torch at the digital wave, goodness gracious. So Clark uses this information to go find Evan's dad. And I really think this is a terrible actor. I think that was a big problem here. But what did you think about this guy, Michael?
I got to try to have some sympathy for him. He did not have a lot to work with. And he didn't have that many lines either. He was basically, he had to convey that he was lost and scared. And I think he did a good job of that. And by the way, Tanner here, played by guest star Matt Ellis, who of course would go on to play Daredevil.
Oh, really? In what?
I'm glad you asked. In the mobile game, Marvel Avengers Academy.
Okay.
So not...
Does he use his New York accent in that as well, or what's the plan?
I don't know. I never played it, but, you know, I got to mention that Daredevil's a cool role, but I got to say, playing Daredevil in Marvel Avengers Academy, probably not the most notable.
Yeah, I was going to say, because like, I think what really, like, I don't know if he's putting on this, like, New York accent or something, like he's trying to be, hey, man, I don't care, you know, what, you know, it's like, I don't know. I don't know if it was an acting choice or that really is his voice, but yeah, I didn't really buy this guy. He did Clark eventually. I mean, I like how assertive Clark is being here because like, hey, you have responsibility, and you can't run away from it. And so he's like, oh, I don't know her. I don't know kid. I ain't no dad. You know, I know what you're talking about, man. But Clark really forces him into telling him what was up. He's like, okay, so I went to this party, met this girl, you know, day later she calls me. She's already pregnant. She's got a belly. He basically tells him the story. Now, did you think he was a student in a Smallville high school? Because I just thought he just worked at Smallville.
I mean, it's so hard to tell on Smallville who's a high school student because some of them look like they're in their 30s, but...
Could be 18, could be 35.
Yeah, I assumed he was a Smallville high student. And I certainly hope he was because he had a baby. He got a high school student pregnant, so I hope he's also a high school student.
Well, I mean, I think that was part of the issue. You know, you're the guest. You're going to call it. So that means we're going to have two high school students die in this episode. So there we go. Anything to add numbers to the tally board is fine by me. So we're going to call this dude a Smallville high school student after all. He just must work at the mechanic shop after school.
And to support that, Chloe pulled up the Evite list of I believed all of them were high school students on that Evite list, and his name was on there.
Yeah, I guess it was just weird that they found him at this mechanic shop and not, like, you know, at school somewhere. You think they would find him there, but and that's why it was more difficult to find him. I mean, that's why I thought he might not have been, but hey, we're going to count him as a student. I agree. And so it's interesting how they're talking about all this stuff, and this would have been a perfect opportunity for them to play that Allison Mack teen pregnancy PSA at the end of the episode again. What do you think, Mike?
This would have been another good opportunity for that. And this episode also did feel kind of like a PSA because, as you've talked about earlier in season 4, this was the season of thirst. Everyone was thirsty. And, you know, this is the end result when you're too thirsty. You gotta be a parent and you gotta be responsible.
Well said. Well said, man. And Clark explains to him that Evan, his son, has a problem and he needs a bone marrow transplant. And then at this point, he just freaks out. He says, I don't want to be part of this, man. He refuses to help and storms off. Clark and Jonathan have a conversation after this. And Jonathan is actually, he's pretty understanding towards this kid, which I thought was a nice touch that shows the different side. Like you had said, Michael, I mean, this kid, I mean, these are all just kids dealing with this stuff way beyond them. And to be told that you're a dad and your son is, you know, rapidly aging and the girl that you got pregnant today and she blew up and the baby was there from that, and now I need your bone marrow. I mean, that's a lot to handle, huh?
Definitely, and that's what makes him, I don't know if I can say interesting, but at least a layered antagonist, the Father Tanner, because you can understand his point of view, and he's not trying to hurt anyone. He's just lost and scared.
And I like how Jonathan, he offers to talk to Evan for Clark. He's like, no, I'll do it. So they go to tell him about how they met his dad, and, you know, he doesn't want to see him, and, you know, he doesn't take it very well. And because he's like, oh, hey, well, great. When I kind of meet him, and it's real awkward there. And then, you know, they try to talk him down because he starts getting upset. And then, of course, he has to do the, you're not my father, Clark, and he runs away. And it's like, oh, they had to do that, right?
This was their last season to add in that high school teenage angst. So they had to get that in.
Well, and it was very similar to when Jonathan told Clark he was an alien. You know, and he gets upset and he runs away, you know, after he sees the spaceship and stuff, and then he goes to the graveyard. So, makes sense, you know. And I got to say, for people who are going to watch this episode again, keep an eye out for Tom Welling's forehead. He must have had a pimple this week in between his eyes, because I definitely kept seeing, like,
like,
a lot of makeup applied. Did you notice this?
I did notice that, yes. I saw that. Right between his eyes, he has a pimple.
So, take heed, everyone. Even Tom Welling, he was 28 years old, had a pimple. So, it happens to the best of us and the best looking of us. So, but yeah, I mean, it's just very obvious. Like, it, you know, because he tried to cover it up with some makeup. I mean, I don't know, maybe they were in rush that day. I mean, obviously, it's not through the whole episode because they filmed these over a course of several days, 7 or 8 days. But for a lot of these scenes in the barn here, you know, you could just look at his forehead. I guess I'll take a screenshot of that to share with everybody too, but you can totally see how they, you know, kind of pancakes and makeup on top of that to cover it up.
Let's just say that was their way of making Clark Kent more relatable.
I guess so. Yeah. If Welling had more pimples, maybe we would have bought him more as a teenager, but
it's the kind of fascinating commentary we have on Always Hold On to Smallville.
There you go. So we have Lex and his one of these scientists, it looks like Jeff Loeb. When I first saw this guy, I thought it was like a Jeff Loeb cameo, but it's the guy with the red hair and the glasses, and we've seen him around before, and he has some speaking parts in this episode. So I appreciate the continuity of the background characters. But they find out that basically that Evan is going to have a chronological event, and he will kill himself and anyone in the immediate area when he ages next, because he's getting older and you know, his body's able to store more energy, so that therefore when he, you know, expunges it, it's going to cause more damage like he did when he turned into a teenager. So the stakes are even higher now, because they didn't know. They thought he was just going to, like, die from old age too quickly, but he's going to, you know, blow up and then blow up anyone and everything around him. You know, part... The next scene, though, is at that mechanic shop, and Evan shows up there to find his dad. So, I don't know, like, Clark had told him, like, I guess Clark was just stalling when he was like, well, can you see him? He's like, well, his name is so-and-so, he works here. You know, he should have told him all that information. That allowed this to happen, Evan to go find him. But in my opinion, that was just Clark stalling because he didn't know what else to tell him about his dad, huh?
Right. I'd agree with that. It's kind of weird that Evan found himself here on his own, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he can drive.
He took the bus or something. Who knows?
It's this kid has been alive for a day and a half. He can read, write, and he's using public transportation. It's ridiculous. But so he confronts his dad. He's like, Dad? He's like, hey, nobody's dead, man. Get away from me, you freak. You're just a monster, you know? And this is the most ridiculous accidental death. Just absurd. Just absolutely absurd. Because the dad stumbles back and he gets impaled on some, you know, shop gear. And it stabs him right through the heart or whatever. And then he falls over and dies. And I was like, Dad? Dad? And this is, I mean, there have been accidental deaths on Smallville before, but this is the worst. It's so
bad. Oh, we are on the same page there. I have that in my notes here. I wanted to ask you, is this the most uncool death on Smallville thus far?
It has to be, right?
Yeah, it has to be. He just casually walks back into an exposed metal blade. What? And there wasn't even a fight scene. This has to be the really rare Smallville episode without a fight scene, because Tanner just gives Evan a quick shove and then casually walks backwards into his death.
Yeah, I mean, they had a little scuffle, if you want to even call it that, but there wasn't even enough force from either one of them to impale someone through this thing that's not even meant to be a weapon. Yeah, it's terrible. And Clark and Lex show up and find the dead dad, and Lex mentions, hey, we need a live donor for the bone marrow transplant, so now there's no hope for Evan at all. And Lex wants to isolate him, you know, because he's going to blow, but Clark, you know, doesn't want to.
Right. It's nice to see Clark and Lex going full Hardy Boys here. They're teaming up to investigate something. When does that happen?
Yeah, you haven't really seen that very often. Usually they run into each other like, what the hell are you doing here? I could ask you the same thing. It's usually how they end up in one of these situations together. But this is a rare episode where they are working together on a mystery. And Evan goes home, and Lana, she has to say, of course, she has to say, where have you been? I have been worried sick about you. It's like, oh my God, like the most cliche mom things to say, right?
Yes, totally. I also had that in my notes to point this out. They just had to get that line in there. But
worried sick about you.
On the glass half full perspective, it is really nice and sweet to see Lana. She's just a total mom here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she does a good job being a mom. I'll give her that. But it's just, they just had to. What are the 7 cliches we can have about, you know, parenting from TV shows can we give Clark and Lana to do in this episode? Great. Nailed it. But Evan, he's feeling that he doesn't have much longer on this earth, and he feels like he's going to blow. But he wants to go to the windmill, which I guess is a safe place to go if he was, you know, by himself, because he'd be kind of remote and away from everybody.
There are 2 establishing shots of the Kent farm here, where you can see a windmill on the Kent farm. I have to mention that.
You know, I thought that too. I was like, why don't they just go up to that windmill or go outside?
Exactly. But I have to bring that up.
No, that is, I thought that myself too, because it's immediately before he mentions going to a windmill. So they could just, I mean, I understand they need to get it far away, but they didn't go there to isolate him from people. They went there because he just wanted to see a windmill. I know that was Lana's like favorite windmill or whatever, but it's like, hey, can we just go outside and look at this windmill in our front yard? So no, I totally
okay,
got that
great
too.
That, yeah, that's a funny note, I think.
So they're going off to the windmill, and Clark and Chloe are at the torch, and Clark mentions what's going on. He's like, oh, have you seen Lana or Evan? And she mentions that there's been some an energy field and some power surges across the power grid. It's funny. She pulls up some power grid, and Clark's even like, what's this? He's like, oh, it's the power grid. It's like, oh, yeah, we have the power grid website that you can just check.
Right? And I was like, why is Chloe even tracking this?
Yeah, it's just very lazy. Like, it's very lazy writing. You have to get all these characters in the position to find, like, because how would he know to go there without that kind of like following the power grid and that kind of thing? So they go out to Chandler Field, which is where that windmill was all the way back in Nicodemus, everyone. If you recall, that's where Lana went up the windmill, and Clark and Lana sat at that windmill at the end of the episode and saw Metropolis, and I've had a few good laughs on the show talking about how close Metropolis was in that, especially in the same episode where Lex says, I'm flying in the best doctors from Metropolis, when you can literally see the city from a windmill. And I will post a comparison of how far away Metropolis was in that episode in season 1 and this episode. It's much further away now than it was back then, because we see Lana and Evan up there. So Clark super speeds up there. Well, he super speeds away from Chloe, you know, classic super speed away from Chloe style. And she says, go get him, Speedy. You know, hilarious, because she knows the secret. I mean, I think this is one episode where Chloe didn't have some, I know your secret, Clark, conversation, huh?
Right, and I remember the first time I watched season 4, I thought of Chloe as a really supportive friend of Clark once she knew his secret. But as you've been going through season 4 week to week recently, I've been watching along with you, and she comes across as like really catty. She just keeps taunting Clark that she knows he's a liar and he needs to tell her something.
Well, you know, because you're so gifted and stuff. What do you mean? Oh, I don't know. Yeah, it's just every single scene. So it was kind of nice that they didn't have that exchange this time. But anyway, Clark super speeds over to the windmill, and Lana and Evan are up there, and he's starting to blow.
Clark just super speeds behind Lana and grabs her, and she does not question it. And Evan is looking at Lana as Clark just super speeds behind her, and he doesn't say a word. Nobody cares that Clark can suddenly climb this huge windmill unnoticed.
Yeah, I just think it's lazy writing. You know, I mean, I know there's a lot going on there. Something mysterious just happened and someone should take note of it, either one of them. I mean, I know Evan has other things going on, but Lana should at least be like, how did you get up here? You know, I mean, he's there in the blink of an eye. So that would definitely raise some questions.
Right. Nobody cares. And it's also interesting to point out here, this is a daytime, either, you know, morning, early afternoon, because we saw Clark and Chloe earlier in the Torch office. But if you back up, when Evan asks Lana to take him to the windmill,
it was clearly
nighttime. So Lana, for whatever reason, decided to wait an entire day to fulfill his dying wish, and she also changed jackets in between.
Another case of what day is it? What time of day is it? What is going on here? I mean, continuity fail, I think, show, because that is, and it's not sunrise; it's just the middle of the day. So, because you're right, we saw Clark and Chloe at school before that. So again, they just didn't think it through. I guess you know how expensive that would have been though to shoot that windmill scene at night. I mean, that's the real problem.
Right.
Clark tells Lana to go, and he's gonna stay because he knows he can take the explosion. They have the dialogue here of like, we didn't find you, you found us, you know, because Evan does tell Clark, he's like, I wish you were my father, Clark. And, yeah, that's a nice sentiment there, and the calling back to the pilot where he says, oh, you found me. Oh, we didn't find you. You found us. You know, that was nice. And then they have that aging effect. It was interesting to have that aging effect where he's going to blow, where he like looks like he turns into an old man or something. What'd you think of that?
That was, you know, the thing I always try to keep in mind is, you know, some of these special effects, they look low rent by today's standards. But when they aired, this was all state of the art. So it doesn't look that great today, but I'm sure it wasn't bad for the time. And it's interesting how you get to see Evan as an old man. I wonder if they got another actor to play old Evan.
Yeah, for that 5 seconds or whatever it was. They probably just CGI aged him or something along those lines, I would assume.
Probably.
But it is nice that Clark stayed with him at the end, because obviously when he was a baby, his real dad ran away and his mom had died. So, and that was Clark's whole thing. He didn't want him alone at the end. He wanted to be there for him and with him. So that was a very Superman thing to do, I think.
That was. It shows, like I've said earlier, Batman is my favorite superhero, but Superman is clearly the nicer and more sympathetic one. And this is that classic Superman sympathy.
Now, he blows up pretty good, and Lana has to hide behind her car, and then Clark comes out, and he's like, oh, I got clear just before. Sure you did, Clark, because you look like you just got blown up. Like, his clothes are just all tattered, and, you know, it reminds me of in season 5 when he throws the nuclear missile into space, and he comes back home to Lana, and he's just in this, like, tattered clothing. It's like, so what the hell happened to you? Or like, how's he gonna explain that? I don't know.
Yes, I wrote exactly that in my notes. This is the much less cool version of season 5's Hidden, where because he's also wearing in Hidden he's wearing the red jacket, blue shirt outfit, and it's torn and burned just like here. But here this has to be Clark's worst excuse to date.
I mean, he didn't even try to zip up the jacket. I mean, I don't know if it would have helped. I mean, he did that in Crisis, which I thought was a nice touch when he got the cover of the bullet hole in his shirt. He zipped up his jacket. So then we get another scene of Clark and Lana kind of lamenting over the death of Evan. And she says something like, Evan's affected us like we knew him for our whole lives. It's like, sure, that's why he's never mentioned again. It has no impact on either of you for the rest of your time on this show, right?
Yes, just another character that has a huge impact on Clark's life, who he immediately forgets about. I think the most noteworthy case, and the one that bothered me the most, was Alicia earlier in season 4. Alicia was his girlfriend who he related to and he seemed to genuinely love, and she died while they were dating, and he was sad about it for what, two scenes, and then never cared again.
Yeah, that is a major that's a major problem for season four. It's episodic television, but it's like, come on guys, like, is it that bad to kind of carry that through? You have these threads of like the stones and Chloe knowing Clark's secret, and, you know, I mean, I know that's a lot of baggage, but, like, can we not keep that thread for just, you know, a few episodes, the last half of the season, maybe? Like, make him, like, make that just an element to his character a little bit? Were they so desperate to get Clark and Lana back together, they just wanted to, like, just get that out of the way as quick as possible? So, yeah, absolutely. And, like, I take more problems with the Alicia thing, because, as you said, she was his girlfriend. He loved her. She died while they were together. She was in multiple episodes across multiple seasons. And this kid was like, okay, yeah, like that exploding baby episode, let's just not talk about it anymore. I mean, that's a little more understandable, but it is a problem with episodic TV where they're still trying to kind of figure things out.
Right. Everyone in Smallville is amazing at handling grief. Like, if Bruce Wayne grew up in Smallville, there would be no Batman. He would just get over his parents' death.
Exactly. That's a great point. So... See, if the Waynes had been shot behind the Talon,
exactly,
there would be no Batman, because Bruce Wayne would be very well adjusted like everyone else in Smallville. Actually, I don't know. You say that. I think everyone in Smallville is terribly adjusted. That's why they continue to make terrible, questionable decisions about themselves and their relationships for the remainder of the show. So that's just the drama and the trauma coming out. But they go on to talk about, you know, oh, our lives are short. Let's make the most of our time. It's like, again, hey, let's get back together. Right. That's what they're really saying. I mean, that's what they're telling. That's what the show was telling the fans, right? These characters are doing. But it was cute that they see the Velveteen Rabbit book there, and Clark said it was, oh, that was my favorite book too. I always saw myself as the rabbit, so I thought that was pretty cute.
Yeah, that was, and it's a night. I mean, this is a classic Clark and Lana scene in the barn, and they both did really great with it. It was a sweet wrap-up to the main storyline of the episode. And also, I thought it was funny. Lana said, one of the things Lana says is, this year I felt so disconnected. And I was thinking, yeah, you've been disconnected from the main story, just off in your own little world with Jason.
Yeah, like the first half of the season. I mean, she had maybe a couple scenes an episode, usually weren't with Clark. You know, you could remove all of her scenes and they wouldn't matter. So yeah, I mean, that's some self-awareness there as well. But then we get our next scene with Lionel and Genevieve, and she's pouring in some wine, which is interesting. So this is her wine. This is her bottle of wine. Okay. So that's how badass Lionel is. He is somehow, unknowns to her, poisoned her bottle of wine because right. She assumes that he got the stone. And she's like, oh, you have something for me? He's like, yes, I do. But it's not what she thought it was, because she drinks it and he doesn't. He kind of walks away. She starts choking, gasping for air.
Plus one for Lionel's unseen connections, I guess.
Yeah, I know, right? But he is cold-blooded here, you know? And also, he talks about parenthood, the lengths we go to. You know, it's kind of a theme of the episode, right? They're kind of tying this plot that didn't fit together with the other one, huh?
Right. And it's this scene in particular is interesting for two reasons. Number one, this episode, it just has to be the only episode of season four where the side plot about the stones is the best part of the episode. And also, number two, because it's interesting how, you know, Genevieve, Dr. Quinn, she's got thirst for the Luthers. There's a line of dialogue. Lionel says, don't all my visits deserve to be celebrated, Genevieve? And Genevieve says, some more than others. Like, and all of their scenes in this episode, they're flirting with each other, and Genevieve clearly has a thing for the Luther family.
Yeah, I mean, she was hitting on Lex earlier. She's implying, you know, she likes Lionel more than her husband here, because she says that Jason inherited his father's, you know, weaknesses, and Lex comes from better stock or whatever. And hey, she's a redhead, so Lionel's into that. I'm shocked that there wasn't some illegitimate child between them that popped up at some point later on in the show, right?
Oh, it's probably for the best that never happened.
I mean, I agree. But yeah, so Lionel, cold-blooded here. right? He's like, if anything happens to my son, the same thing will happen to you. I have here an antidote, and you're going to give me the stone that you have, that you killed Bridget Grosby for, and I'm going to give you this antidote. Do we have a deal? It's like, whoa, like, what? Like, that's the thing, like, the back and forth between Lionel, it's kind of, like, kind of cheap and annoying, like, from a character arc standpoint, right? But it's so good to see him back, and John Glover's such a great actor. I don't care. I love it, so I'm glad he's back.
Yes, John Glover can make anything work, and yeah, in this scene, it's interesting because, you know, the sweater-wearing, politely smiling Lionel, he has left the building at this point.
Yes, yes, we are back to season 2 and 3 peak Lionel here at the end of this episode. And, so we assume that she gives Lionel that stone and he gives her the antidote because we're kind of left hanging there. But anyway, we go to the Kents and Clark and they're wrapping up their thoughts on the whole situation with Evan. And it's a good scene between them. And the most important thing about it is Clark, you know, he makes a comment about like how he's an alien. I mean, he's not from the planet. He doesn't even know if he's ever going to have kids one day. But Martha points out that, hey, me and your father couldn't have kids and you came into our lives. You know, I think that was a good scene because you don't really think about that. Sometimes Smallville does touch on these things like, is Superman going to live forever? He's going to outlive all his loved ones. Is he able to have kids? You know, things that you don't really, you know, you don't think about until you really start, you know, thinking forward about Superman and him being an alien, what that really means. So I think this was actually a really good scene between Clark and the Kents, and it's something that little things like this in the episode that elevate it from being like the worst episode ever that a lot of people say it is.
Yeah, this is a good scene, and because this episode kind of followed the egg baby cliche, this is in those egg baby episodes, this is what the high school kids always find out, that parenting is a lot harder than they think it is. And it's also this scene in particular, I think, is really interesting because it touches on does Smallville's Clark Kent live forever? Does it, you know, it, that's something we don't know. There was an, maybe you can help me out here. There was an episode in season 2 where there was the meteor freak of the episode, when he touched people, he could see people's future.
Yeah, that's in season 3 Hereafter, right? And we see, and he's like, it's like you don't have it in. It's like you go on forever. So I mean, that is one interpretation of what that vision is. So, and there is obviously in season 1 where he sees the future and he's surrounded by the graveyard of everyone that he loved is dead. And so that they do hint that Superman is immortal here in Smallville.
Yes, and that is, you know, Superman is, I always looked at Superman as the light to Batman's darkness. He's fun, he's upbeat, he's just so, he believes in people. But that is the dark side of Superman. He's going to outlive everyone he loves. That's dark.
And on that note,
my goodness, see, this scene got dark for me.
Yeah, so actually, my interpretation of that scene was, and Hereafter, was that Superman flying to, like, the remains of Krypton to die at the end, because it's like, it looked like space, it looked like some green stuff, you know? It's the cape. So I choose to see it as everyone, yeah, maybe Earth is destroyed. I don't know. Maybe he has outlived everyone at that point, and he's going off to die, you know? So that's equally dark.
You know, right.
But, that's another interpretation I think you could take from that if you want to go there. But yes, there is an underlining tragedy to Superman's situation, much like a Highlander. But anyway, we get our last scene of the episode, and Clark comes in and Lex and that scientist guy, that Jeff Loeb looking scientist, the redhead with the glasses, are there like doing some business, and he thanks Lex for straightening things out with Child Services, whatever that means, right? Because as you said, why would they even let Clark take him? And now he's blown, he's dead. Where does this baby go? So we have the whole Deuce Ex Lex to solve that problem.
Right, Lex is, man, Lex has amazing unseen connections, because how do you possibly explain taking a baby home from the hospital that's not yours, that you found, and then they're blown up, and Lex just magically made that all okay? Like, Clark and Lana, if they ever want to adopt in the future, they're going to have a hard time because of this.
Very true, very true. But, you know, Lex did monitor the kid. I mean, they have the scientific data, so I assume he just shared that information with whatever the authorities are, and they, you know, he's a Luther, so I'm sure some money was involved, and
right,
that problem went away.
Right. But, you may be right, but he also said he's withholding the information that he found. So
that's, yes, yeah, that's
what made me question this.
So yeah, that's very interesting. So Lex mentions to Clark that he's studying, you know, Evan's unique biology, and that's going to have all these excellent ramifications for medicine and advancement for years to come, and it's going to touch thousands of lives. You know, it's amazing, and Evan didn't die in vain, and then they have this awkward moment where they both tell each other they're going to be great dads, and they kind of shake hands, which I think was a little random for them to do, huh?
It was there. You know, it's funny, in the last episode, Blank, Lex says to Clark, "We dropped the formalities a long time ago. Apparently, not all of them, because they're supposedly best friends, but here they go for the business handshake."
I can't even remember seeing Clark and Lex shake hands ever before. But it is, and this shows you, Lex is, you know, creeping further and further to the dark side, right? Because Clark leaves, and the scientist is like, "Mr. Luther, are you really going to release all those findings? You're going to go public with that?" And Lex says, "Eventually." And that's when the episode ends. I'm like, okay, I like that. That's a nice beat to end on. It just shows you that, you know, Lex, you know, he's a lot of talk, but when it comes down to it, he's going to profit from it first and find out what he wants to know before he shares that knowledge with anybody.
Yes, it was a really cool ending. Again, Michael Rosenbaum, as always, does a great job as Lex here. And it's interesting, just something I want to ask you real quick, because I don't recall you talking about this on the podcast, but one, and it's probably a fan theory, but one thing I read online is that on Smallville, you can tell how much a character is hiding based on how much of their face is in the light and how much is in the shadow. And here, his face was pretty much in the shadows.
That's interesting. I mean, that's the kind of lighting design they apply to a lot of films when they want to tell storytelling through cinematography. But being a weekly television show, you know, they really don't have the luxury to do that all the time on Smallville, but it is really it's an amazingly well-shot show, so I don't doubt that there was a lot of intentional lighting in that situation.
Right, and I'm glad you pointed that out. The cinematography in Smallville, honestly, I can't recall a show with better visuals. This show looks fantastic and sounds fantastic. The best way to experience Smallville is on a big screen TV with surround sound.
You did everything you could, Clark.
I'm sure Evan knew that.
All the times that I've run off or disappeared or almost died, how do you guys deal with that?
Well, it isn't easy, Clark, but it does come with the territory. See, every parent's greatest fear is that one day they will lose their child forever.
Seems like raising a kid's the toughest job in the world.
It's also the most rewarding.
There is nothing quite like watching your son grow up into a young man you can be very proud of.
It's too bad I'll never know what that's like.
Why not?
I'm from another planet. I'm not even human. Who knows if I can have kids?
Clark, your father and I couldn't have children. We were still blessed with a son. You never know what the future will bring you.
Ageless got a 7.8. out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1.5 out of 5. So, Michael, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Ageless?
I'm glad you asked. We're going to get to that, but first, I just kind of want to talk about what the people, what the Smallville fans think of Ageless. And I found an IGN forum from 2005, right after this episode aired.
Oh, all right. Archive opinion. Yes. Perfect.
And 6 people liked the episode. 13 people did not. And one of the comments that just made me laugh, I have to mention it. One person said, episodes like this is the reason America's Next Top Model gets better ratings than Smallville. What a dig. And also want to mention, there's a Krypton site poll on a scale of 1 to 10. There were 9 ratings of 7 and above for this episode, and 24 ratings of 6 and below, including 16 ratings of 1 out of 10. So this is not a very well-received episode, as we know. And for my grade that I'll give it, I think I'm going to be more generous than you on this episode. And it's also really cool that I got to be on the podcast for Ageless, because for whatever reason, last year when I went back and binge watched Smallville, for whatever reason, Ageless was the one episode I remembered from beginning to end. I remembered every scene. So I do have some nostalgia, possibly, that's making me biased, but I don't think this episode was all that bad. I was debating between a C or a C plus, so let's go with the higher one. I'll give this one a C plus.
Alrighty, C plus for you. For me, I do think there is more here than people give it credit for. I like the talks between Jonathan and Martha and Clark about parenthood, and I also like the dynamic between Clark and Lex here, and you know, especially that ending scene that helps a lot. The Lionel Genevieve stuff, pretty good. So that gives it enough to make it not like the worst of the worst. Although, I mean, the concept here, super aging baby, exploding baby, can read and talk, and the death of his dad is so lame, you know. I mean, there's a lot working against it, right? A lot working against it. The Force Clark and Lana stuff. So ultimately, I'm going to find myself at a D plus for this one.
Ooh, that's your lowest rating that you've ever given.
I've looked up ratings, and I believe Facade was a D minus.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. I didn't go back before season 4, but there are one or two episodes. I think I don't know what I gave Redux, but it's pretty low too. I think that might have been a D. But this is a bottom 5 episode so far. At some point on one of these mailbag shows, maybe I'll kind of do the math and kind of see what the lowest and highest ones I've given at least are, just out of curiosity. But yeah, I'm gonna give this one a D plus. Not as bad as people say, but it's still pretty bad.
Right, and I was hoping, I think I failed, but I was hoping to get you to come around and think of this episode a little bit more positively. But
well, that's where the plus sign comes from, man. I mean, because I had a D slash D plus, and I decided to go a D plus. So there you go.
Great, because I was about to say, Zach, I'm the one willing to defend Ageless. I am the villain of this episode. But apparently not. We found common ground.
So C plus for you, a D plus for me. Let's get into our tally board. We have a plus 1 for hospital visits because they take baby Evan there when they find him in the field. So that's 66. We have a plus 2 for Chloe's unseen connections because of how she finds out about who Evan's parents are. So that brings us to 22. We have a plus 1 for blue shirt, red jacket.
Yes.
Because Clark wears that when he gets blown up, just like, you know, in Hidden and many other episodes. So that brings us to 24. And then we have a plus 2, as we decided, live on air here, that we have 2 Smallville High School student deaths. Because we're just going to assume that Evan's dad was a student. And I totally slipped my mind that Evan's mom was, because she blown up before we even found out who she was. So that brings us to plus 2, which brings us to 15. So far, as we come to a close, only 2 more episodes left. We're going to see where that Smallville High School student death count ends. Maybe I'll do a Metropolis University death count at some point. No, I don't know. We don't spend enough time there.
Right, so there's not enough content there.
So, Michael Bechdel test. Does this episode pass? Because I don't think it does.
Ooh.
Because Chloe and Lana are talking about the baby, but it immediately gets to talking about Clark. So that kind of undercut that scene for Bechdel passing. I think that was Joe an opportunity.
Right. I was looking out for that. And I think the closest this episode came was Lana and Chloe talking about the baby, but the baby Evan is a male, so this is a fail.
Yeah, well, there you have it. So, fail for the Bechdel test. Well, there you go. That's our tally board this week. Michael, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the podcast, man. If people want to hear from you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
Oh, wow. I deleted my Twitter not too long ago, and actually, to be honest, I'm a lot happier now.
Yes, your life is probably better for it. I'm not going to lie. So.
Right. But I do want to point out when I reached out to you, told you I love the podcast, I'd love to come on, I sent you an episode of a radio show that I did. I would love to promote that, but I'm not doing my radio show right now. I don't know if that's going to come back, but I'd like to plug titanradio.org. That's T-I-T-A-N radio.org. That's California State University Fullerton's radio station. And unfortunately, right when this is going to be released, it's summer with no content. But outside of summer, there is some great radio shows from college students there. And we have so much freedom at Titan Radio, so there's no restraint. So you're going to hear some really cool, unfiltered content where everyone can be creative.
All righty. Well, everybody check that out. And as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also the host of Standard Orbit, Trek FM's original series podcast. We talk about all things Captain Kirk and the Enterprise over there. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. And as for the podcast itself, you can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Holding a Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. Once again, with one S. Well, that's going to do it for this week. And ageless. But stay tuned next time where we talk about forever. And until then, always hold on to Smallville.
Sex is too important not to talk about. Now's the time to get the right answers and to make the right decisions. Whether you're a parent or a teen, find out more at www.teenpregnancy.org.